ओम ज्ञान तमिलंदस्य जनार्जन सलाकाय चक्षुस मिलतं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः श्री चैतन्य मनोविष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामयं ददति सापदन्तिकं वंशकल्पतुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभैव च Patitanam Pabinebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Vrindavan's pastimes, or the pastimes rather, that the Supreme Absolute Truth performs in Sri Vrindavan Dham are extremely esoteric, mysterious, and very secret. The path of Srila Rupa Goswami and the path that we've been hearing about that describes Rupa Goswami's visit to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his empowerment by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is wonderful, especially because it leads us to the esoteric, mysterious land of Vrindavan. Can a path that is wonderfully paved but goes to hell be considered a wonderful path? Certainly not. And no one, if they know where they're going, will travel on that path if they know where it leads. But the path that has been described, that begins by surrendering, developing deep humility, and its concomitant dependence on Krishna's mercy. And then that same path which causes us to chant the holy names of Krishna, as we have heard with the wonderful verse of Rupa Goswami, Tunde Tundavali. And then the heart is purified further and also enriched by hearing the pastimes of Krishna from the beautiful Bhagavata. And then, despite all our failings on the path, if we can take shelter of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu, then by his mercy and his response to the sincerity of our attempt, then bhakti takes birth within our heart. Purification is required, a positive taste is required, and ultimately mercy is required. Ultimately mercy is required. And also ultimately a very deep desire on the part of the practitioner is required. And that is what attracts Krishna's mercy. The deep desire for what? To be in Vrindavan? Not exactly, but for service. The land of Vrindavan is so mysterious and so difficult to understand because of what goes on here. When one thinks of God, if you ask any person, practically speaking, in the world, who is God, what is God, what is your conception of God, what is your relationship with God, it's always full of fear. There is love, certainly there is surrender, but the concept of God generally is Ishvara. It begins and ends with Ishvara. And Ishvara means the controller or the creator, or the unspeakable, who is beyond words and form and name. And that is compared to one's relationship, a citizen's relationship with the government. The government is everywhere. You feel the influence of the government. Some places we feel no influence of the government because the government doesn't really do anything. But theoretically, the government is power, and its power affects every citizen, and one has to live according to the restrictions and regulations and the laws of the government. But then, behind the government, there is a person. The understanding of just the power of the government, that it is everywhere, is the understanding, basically, of Brahman understanding. The power, the raw power. And then beyond the raw power of the government, one can understand that there is a person behind the government, a king, perhaps a king or some presidential officer. And he sits on his big, tall throne. And when everyone comes in, the citizens come in to see the king, they have to tremble. Because he holds power over their life, over their death. He judges what they do as right or wrong. And if he judges, you have done wrong, army, cut off his head. So when one stands before the king, one trembles, one is filled with fear. And for the ordinary citizen, this is actually correct. It is required. Because without fear of the ruler, everyone will just act whimsically, and whimsically do as they like, and there will be no law, and the ordinary citizens, practically speaking, will be tortured. So the king sits on his throne, and everything is very hushed and quiet and so much reverence, and actually this is the mood of deity worship. When you go into the temple, everyone's mood should be quite somber, and that's why. And just imagine you're in the king's throne. He has his armies there. The courtroom is there, and then your mobile phone goes off. Right, you're just one of the citizens, and you start talking loudly to your friend in front of the king, or you just start carrying on a conversation in front of the king. What's going to happen to you? You don't know. He might put you in prison because of your disrespect. And it's proper, because unless there is respect, and respect includes some fear, unless that is there, no one will follow the laws. And then how will a king or any country go on? There'll be chaos, like the traffic in Delhi. But yet, at some point, the king stands up, perhaps even with his queen, who sits also somberly by his side the whole time, and they walk out. And actually, I don't have it with me, but in the Krishna book, when Krishna is sitting in his in Dwarka, in the assembly house, and the description of court, the court of Krishna, with different persons sitting on his different sides, and there is a great effulgence coming from Krishna as he sits on his opulent throne. That's more or less a description of the highest religious concept of God that you find in this world. It is remarkably how people see God in the kingdom of God, if people are religious. But yet at some point the king stands up and walks out with his king, and one and two trusted guards, and they walk out, and everyone must stand up when he leaves. And then he walks into his private quarters, and he can take the heavy throne from his head, close the door, and then he can just relax. He can tell some jokes to his wife, and his wife can tease him, and the children can come in, and they can play. He can take off his shoes. He can sit back. He can wrestle with his young son. His wife can tease him a little bit. Something. He can just relax and act as he wants, instead of having everyone just, please, I want you to do this. Oh Lord, do that. Oh Lord, this problem is there. Please solve it. All day long, every day, these armies are attacking. So when he can take his crown off, he's still the king. It's not a different person. The government, the king sitting on the throne, and the king sitting in his private quarters with his beloved and trusted family members, and the very, very trusted, tested and trusted guards, then he can just be himself. And in the case of Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that king relaxed in his personal throne room exhibits his full personality. When he's sitting on the throne, one aspect of himself is there. His majesty, his power, his knowledge, his controlling aspects. But his full personality is manifested in his private quarters. And in the case again of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that full personality is all attractive. And everyone naturally loves him because he's all attractive, because he's all beautiful, because he's all wealthy, because his personality is so charming. And he's so clever that the predominating mood in his private quarters is not fear at all. It is just attraction and devotion and love. And what can I do? I even know what to do for you. The king is he's playing with his grandson or his son, and the son is climbing on him. He knows just what's going to give his grandfather pleasure. You don't even have to say this is what is pleasing to the, because the dominance in the relationship is love. Love is ruling. It is dictating what is done there, in the private quarters. It dictates what is done and what is not done. Because everyone there is loving and therefore trusted, and they're acting for his pleasure, not out of force, not out of fear, but of their just spontaneous affection for this all-attractive person, and that is Krishna. He is Ikendra, Eka Indra. He is the king of all kings. But that describes his quality. And the word Krishna, the primary name, as opposed to secondary names, Govinda, Krishna, Gopinath, describe his personality and activities always in relationship with his beloved devotees. When we think of him as in the secondary names in relationship to his kingdom, this material world, his power and opulences come out, and his controlling nature comes out. But when we think of him at home, in his private quarters, playing with his dearest, really being himself, then the sweetness of his personality is exhibited. Those who are in his kingdom in the material world, they cannot enter his private quarters, because they should not enter. They should not enter. Because why should they not enter if an ordinary citizen who's following the rules, the laws of the country, out of fear of the king, of displeasing him, and wishing to keep his head still on his shoulders and not wishing to be punished by the guards and the king's armies. If he sees the king relaxing and playing and joking, he's going to lose his fear and lose his reverence and lose his respect, and then he's not going to follow the laws because he's going to think that the king is an ordinary person, like me. But yet the king is not an ordinary person. And Krishna is not an ordinary person. And when Krishna laughs in Vrindavan, and even when Krishna dances with the gopis in Vrindavan, and plays with his cowherd boyfriends in Vrindavan, and sometimes the cowherd boys, Krishna, aham purvam, Krishna walks ahead to see the Vrindavan forest, and the cowherd boys run to him, just trying to touch Krishna, because they cannot for a moment be without his presence. And when Krishna walks behind a tree, they miss him. And when the Braja Gopikas blink their eyes, they miss him. When they blink their eyes, they miss him. How attractive is Krishna? And how much attraction the Braja Gopikas have for Krishna. But anyone and everyone cannot enter, because they will judge the king laughing, playing, dancing, swimming, doing what he's doing with his trusted entourage in the palace. They will judge him by the laws of the state. But the laws of the state are in effect for a completely different reason. They are for the citizens. They are not for the king. Different laws apply in the palace in Goloka Vrindavan. A completely different set of laws. And what are those laws? There is practically one law, or rather one law for everyone, and that is everything for the pleasure of Krishna. And that law neither has to be stated or posted or enforced. Because the enforcer in Goloka Vrindavan is the love of the devotees. It is completely natural, spontaneous. Otherwise they wouldn't be there. So they are there with their spontaneous love, everything for Krishna's pleasure, and they know just how to please Krishna. And again, what dictates how to please Krishna? It is their love, depending upon their rasa or relationship with Krishna, either as servant or friend or parent or lover. They know just how to please Krishna. They know just what to do to capture Krishna's mind and give it pleasure. So from the side of the personalities, the personages in the private quarters of Krishna in Vrindavan, where Krishna's pleasure is to wander around by Govardhan Hill, and his companion is the flute, just wandering without shoes and mocking the land of Vrindavan, the dust of Vrindavan, with the footprints, his lotus footprints, making Jayatete Dikam, making the land of Vrindavan supremely fortunate. His pleasure is acting in a way that is inconceivable to the ordinary citizens. But this is his pleasure because he is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And what pleases him is according to his personality, who he is, what he likes. He likes a peacock feather. He likes the flute. He likes cows. He likes this village life. And that reflects, his likes reflect into this world as a simple living style that is ideal in its way. Agriculturally based, farming based, peaceful, sweet. The relationships are sweet. And in Vrindavan, there is a different time even. The time factor, Kalosmin Loka Chaya Krit, rules this world, the kingdom of the citizens of this world. It rules it completely and dictates. It continuously moves on and ultimately crushes everything. It is a time factor, is the dictator of this world. Pushing. We like a situation, it doesn't make a difference. It will crush that situation. We dislike a situation, it doesn't make a difference. It will crush that situation. Everything, every place becomes crushed by this unstoppable, irreversible, irrevocable force of time. But in the spiritual world, there is time, but it has a completely different function. Here, time forces this once youthful body to get wrinkled and old. Very wrinkled. Very old. And then, finish. Make way for someone else. Your body, ashes, finished. It must happen. It's unavoidable. But time's function in the spiritual world is completely different, because like everything and everyone else in the spiritual world, time serves Krishna's pleasure. Not destroys Krishna's pleasure like it destroys all our pleasure in this world. Whatever we find enjoyable, crushed into dust in time. But in the spiritual world, past, present, future, just serve the pastimes of Krishna, as everyone and everything else does. So, yesterday we heard a comment, the one comment by Purnamasi Devi, who is Yogamaya herself. Does anyone remember what Purnamasi said, what she was trying to do? Does anyone remember? Do you remember? Who remembers? Yes.
Trying to save Krishna.
No, not save. Bring Radha and Krishna together. This is an eternal pastime. Purvaraga, the first meeting of Radha and Krishna. This goes on forever, ever fresh. And each time that fresh love is ignited by Yogamaya, it brings C.C. Radha and Krishna the greatest happiness. It brings the devotees the greatest happiness. It's an exciting drama. And it goes on forever. And this is the desire of the devotees, far different from everything a materialist desires in the kingdom of the material world, which is so self-centered and selfish. And when we take the concept of Krishna and try to place it, the concept of Krishna in our materialistic personality, with our materialistic intelligence, bringing Krishna pleasure, then there's no pleasure in it for me. And so I go to God and I tell him all my problems and solve this problem and solve that. Then God has a relevance. Or if I want to go to Vrindavan with my materialistic mind, I'm thinking, well, then I'll be with Krishna and I'll do something with Krishna, as if I have the capacity to give the Supreme Personality, whose body is composed of bliss and eternity, and knowledge, that I'm going to give him something that he doesn't have, or does, It's such an arrogance on my part. So, for the devotees, the aspiring devotees, the devotees of the devotees, they learn to take a step back, not to push themselves forward always. Here I am, Krishna. You must be really happy. I'm making some advancement. Soon you'll have the great pleasure of being with me. Here I am. Guess who offered that flower to you? It's me. Who's dominant in that? Krishna's just a small part in the great drama that I'm the star of, which is my material consciousness. But the devotees and the aspiring devotees, they learn to be attuned, as we've been saying, to what is actually pleasure giving to Krishna by becoming the servants of those who know how to give Krishna pleasure, the servants of their servants, serving Krishna's pleasure. And Srimati Radharani and the other residents of Vrindavan, they are Krishna's internal energy, his pleasure-giving potency, especially, of course, Ladini Shakti Srimati Radharani. So we can't take our material consciousness into the inner quarters of Krishna, and we can't judge what Krishna is doing in his inner quarters by our material consciousness. That material consciousness must be cleansed and purified and imbued, colored, completely colored with love for Krishna. And then we can enter. We can say that the doorway into Goloka Vrindavan is very, very small. And we can also say that our false ego is very, very, very... Everyone can answer that question for themselves. And if we say, probably if we say, my false ego is very small, I have the smallest false ego of anyone, so that's an indication of something. But that door is small, so therefore that dainya, that utter humility, is so required to enter, and therefore to become the dog of a Vaishnava, to become filled with humility, to become dependent on mercy, so much attracts Krishna and attracts the Shakti, the Kripa Shakti of Krishna's dear ones. So Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan are very mysterious, and they cannot be penetrated by the materialistic mind because the principles that govern them are completely different than the realm of the materialistic mind. Here is one song by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explaining or describing the mood, just like Purnamasi had, to bring Radha and Krishna together. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I have no power to bear Sri Radha's condition. Separated from Lord Krishna. For the happy reunion of the divine couple, I am prepared to give up my life. For a moment leaving Radha's feet, I would be at once devastated. For Radha's sake, I will die 100 times. I gladly accept that suffering. When will I serve Radha's feet? O people of Braja, when will you be compassionate and take me to the forests of Braja? O Vilas Manjari. O Ananga Manjari. O Rupa Goswami. Please pick me up and place me at your feet. And please give me the best of all perfections. Arranging the meeting of Radha and Krishna. On a different level, a level that Prabhupada was speaking to us on in 1976, he explained in the sheet that I distributed yesterday that I hope you brought, 7 minutes and 24 seconds worth of explaining the leelas of Krishna and their and how they are not material. How do you make someone with a material mind understand that these are not material? And all, when the person, all he knows is matter. One time in 1967, His Holiness Tamal Krishna Goswami, who was then Tamal Krishna Das, asked Srila Prabhupada, or maybe it was Jivananda Prabhu in San Francisco, during the Vietnam War days, asked Prabhupada, what is it like in Goloka Vrindavan? And Prabhupada's answer was, you won't be bothered by the draft board, the government agency that pulls you into the army. What does the draft board have to do with Goloka Vrindavan? But the anxieties that you are feeling now, they simply do not exist there. Some crazy hippie asked Prabhupada, what is it like in Vrindavan? He said, it is like an ocean of LSD. Because his conception of happiness was LSD. So just imagine an ocean. On a more elevated level, in Rupa Goswami in Nectar Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, says that if you take the happiness of this world and times it by millions and millions, it doesn't equal one drop of the ocean of Brahmananda, spiritual happiness. And then he quotes from Srila Sridhar Swami, commenting on the Bhavarta Deepika commentary of the Bhagavatam, saying that if you take the happiness of Brahmanda and you multiply it a million times or a billion times or a trillion times, it does not equal a drop of the happiness of prema. So how can I, with my materialistic consciousness, understand what Vrindavan is like? But somehow or another, in the holy Dham, if we can just hear and chant and stop our materialistic minds continuously accepting, rejecting, and worrying, and lamenting, and thinking, and judging, there's just the curtain, the veil between the spiritual world and our perceivable Vrindavan is so thin that something comes through and the heart becomes somewhat touched. And Prabhupada even says in the Krishna book that even when a materialist comes to Vrindavan, they experience separation from Krishna because the veil is thin. So here is how what he explained in 1976 about the pastimes of Krishna. Let's see if technology will serve properly. It appears to be doing so. Okay.
Not obliged, but it takes pleasure.
Let's start again.
Sometimes, this is called pastime. He's not obliged.
So he's explaining what pastimes, the devotees. In 1968, there's one lecture, 66, Prabhupada's talking, and he says, you'll never see a picture of Krishna as an old man. Have any of you seen a picture of Krishna as an old man? No one answers. And then he says, have any of you ever seen a picture of Krishna? No one answers. So how are you going to explain these things? Where do you begin? So he's now going to explain pastimes, the activities, the lila of Krishna, and how it's non-material, it's spiritual, it's always pure. Even when Krishna is dancing with the wives of others in the middle of night, it's not the same as if one of us were dancing with the wives or husbands of others in the middle of night. It's not the same at all. It's pure, it's perfect, it's spiritual, it's lila, it's a pastime.
That's pleasure. That's why sometimes we take pleasure in the swimming pool.
You have to, a teacher knows that you have to explain the unknown by explaining the known. Just like we take pleasure in a swimming pool.
And closing our eyes, the expert swimmer, they are lying down. Why it is not possible for the swimmer? What is we can do? Subhanallah. We take that pastime for pleasure. For pleasure, lying down on the water, closing eyes. So, when we see this Garbhodu Sai Vishnu lying down in the mother's ocean, these rascals, fools, they sometimes criticize. How it is not possible? An ordinary man can take pleasure lying down on the water, closing, and lying for hours. We have seen it. So what is the difficulty for the Supreme Lord? You have got this tendency to lie down on water, half on the water, and close your eyes. So where your tendency has come? Your tendency has come because the same tendency is there in the Supreme Lord. This is explained. Yato bhāni māni bhūtāni jānanti janmādrasya jatāha. This is the basic. Everything, whatever you see, that is there in the Supreme Being. Why we make love appear with young girls or young boys? Because the same propensity is there. Lakhi sahasra sata sammramasi pamānam. Krishna is enjoying in the Goloka Vrindavan with so many young girls. That tendency to enjoy the company of young girls or young boys is there. Otherwise, where from it has come? That is the explanation. Everything, whatever you see, everything, yamādhasya-jata, that is there. So this sleeping of Dhananāna Sai Vishnu is not extraordinary. Because if we study our inclination, our sense of pleasure, if we simply study ourselves, you'll find that the Supreme Lord possessing the same thing, but interior, without any touch of Maya or without any touch of the three gunas. Then you can understand what is God. God means, because we are part and parcel of God. So, you study yourself, you'll find the same quality. Just like a small drop of seawater, you analyze it, what chemicals are there, the same chemicals are in the ocean. The difference is quantity. Quality is the same. That is called Achintya Bhedabheda. We are qualitatively one with God, not quantitative. The Mayavadi philosopher, they think we are also quantitatively the same. That is mistake. That is not possible. Otherwise, why it is said, Sito natu tama na guram sudhu. This is so big that he is above this quality. It's like we become infected in a filthy place. But the sun does not become infected. It rather sterilizes that infected. So we should not compare with Antatayam equal. No, that is not possible. Tejasam Adosam. The sun, when it absorbs water from the urinal, is not infected. It makes that urinal sterilize. Similarly, if sometimes we see some behavior of the Supreme Lord which appears from social, our social point of view, as not permitted, but he can do everything. That is the meaning of all power. But he is not affected. He is not affected. Apapavidham in the Upanishad is that sinful activities, he cannot do anything which is sinful. God is always good. But to our calculation, limited calculation, we see that he is committing something sinful. But it is not sinful. It is sterilized. Same is the Tejasam Adosaya. Even by chanting his holy name, we become sinless. How God can become sinful? It's not possible. This is common sense. By chanting His holy name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, so we become purified. How Krishna can be impure? Pavittam Paramam Bhava. Try to understand Krishna here in this presence. Sito natu tamana punam sutim ke. This is Krishna. This is Vishnu, Krishna. Never think there are some party. They say, we worship Krishna, Balakrishna, boy Krishna. Sometimes they give reason that why not grown-up Krishna. They say the grown-up Krishna was polluted by Rasi, the sea people. That is not Krishna is always Krishna. This is foolish conclusion that Chai Krishna is pure than young Krishna. This is wrong conclusion. Krishna Vaya was 3 months old. He could give a big gigantic which that Pluton can a 3 months old child can kill such a being. No. Krishna is always there. Either he appears in 3 months or 300 years or 3,000, he will say. This is called pastime.
So now let us hear some wonderful pastime, or part of a wonderful pastime, very, very intimate in the inner chambers of the house of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in Vrindavan. These are a segment of Vidugdha Madhava, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ramananda Roy, Savabhoma Bhattacharya, they're asking Rupa Goswami to read some verses. So instead of just reading some of the verses, we'll read the section of Vidugdha Madhava where Rupa Goswami is pulling those verses from in his response to Ramananda Roy. But where is the reader? She's just now coming. She's making her entrance. Here comes Purnamasi herself in her blue sari and white hair. That was quick thinking on my part, because in the script it said red sari, but it did say white hair. Okay. Here it comes.
So this is Act 2 of Vidugdha Madhava. And the act begins with Srimati Radharani becoming greatly distressed because she has fallen in love with the person who plays the beautiful flute. And then she has heard the name Krishna. And she's fallen in love with the person whose name is Krishna. And then at the order of Purnamasi in Act 1, Vishakha has drawn a beautiful picture of Krishna and brought this also to show to Srimati Radharani. And Srimati Radharani has fallen in love with the boy in the picture. And so she is feeling that now I have fallen in love with three men. So my life is really, really now condemned. And her friends are trying to understand why she's so disturbed and why she's acting in so many irrational ways. And finally, she tells them her difficulty. And they're very happy. And they explain to her that you have not turned from Krishna. You have not fallen in love with any other man. These three persons are one person. They are all Krishna, the great hero. So then Radhika is relieved. Meanwhile, Mukhara has gone to Purnamasi because she's so worried about Radha. So Purnamasi and Mukhara are conversing with each other, and young Nandimukhi is nearby, and Radha and Lalita and Vishakha are sitting over to the side. So Purnamasi says, Mukhara, why do you think that Radha suffers from an incurable illness? Mukhara, noble lady, just listen. Upon seeing a peacock feather in front of her, this girl suddenly begins to tremble. And sometimes she sees a necklace of gunja berries. And she sheds tears and cries out loudly. I do not know what kind of new ecstatic influence has entered the heart of this poor girl. But it has imbued her with the dancing attitude of a player, creating wonderful, unprecedented dances on a stage. Purnamasi, to herself, to the side, she says, Ha, this is the intensity of new love. Then she says to Mukhara, I understand this very well. Kamsa and the other crowns of the demons are searching for Radha, and they have made a ghost enter into her body. Mukhara, noble lady, what is the remedy? Purnamasi, the remedy is a glimpse of Krishna, who is the sworn enemy of the demons. Mukhara, noble lady, this will not please crooked Jyotila. Purnamasi, Mukhara, I will tell her, I will say, Jyotila, don't worry. With my mystic power, I will bring Krishna. You will not be the son of Nanda Maharaj. Mukhara, very well. So she offers her obeisances and she leaves. Then Purnamasi walks over to Radha, who is sitting nearby, and she says, Child, now my desires are fulfilled. Radha conceals her emotions, and she offers her obeisances to Purnamasi. Purnamasi is looking at Radha very carefully, and she says to herself, and aside, she says, Radha is tasting the sweetness of new love, although she shyly is trying to hide it. This lotus-eyed girl has been conquered by the regal elephant that plays in the garden of her heart. Then she says, Purnamasi whispers to Nandimukhi, her granddaughter. She says, Nandimukhi, her heart is tossed by waves of deep love. Know that this is caused by the wonderful and inconceivable power of Krishna. Just see how wonderful this is. Great sages meditate upon Krishna after being relieved of all material transactions. And then with great difficulty, they try to situate Krishna within their heart. And opposite to this, this young girl is trying to withdraw her mind from Krishna. And she wants to apply it to material activities. What a regrettable thing it is that this girl is trying to drive away from her heart the same Krishna who is sought after by those great sages through severe austerities and penances. Nandimukhi says, Noble lady, this kind of love bewilders me. Purnamasi, child, what you say is true. This deep and ecstatic love is very, very rare and very difficult to obtain. Listen, my dear beautiful friend, if one develops love of Godhead, love for Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj, then all the bitter and sweet influences of this love will manifest in one's heart. Such love of Godhead acts in two ways. The poisonous effect of love of Godhead defeats the severe and fresh poison of a serpent. Yet there is simultaneously transcendental bliss, which pours down and defeats, and which pours down as happiness derived as if pouring nectar on one's head. It is perceived, therefore, as doubly effective, simultaneously poisonous and nectarine. Purnamasi says, let us test her love. So she walks up to Radha and she says, Child, we would like to ask you some questions. Radha is standing. Purnamasi says, as her test, she says, Your self-control, your love, pious deeds, and birth in a prosperous and pious family are all famous in the town of Gokul. So Radha, why are you not ashamed to be so cruel to your friends by causing them to suffer so much when they see your suffering? Then, distressed and embarrassed, very shyly Radha whispers in the ear of Lalita. And Lalita says, Noble lady, Radha shall explain herself. Radha. O noble lady, I take an oath upon your feet that I have not done anything wrong. Even though again and again I struck him with a garland of lotus flowers, that dark bluish boy would not give up the pleasure of embracing me. Purnamasi, beautiful bewildered girl, why did you not do something more ferocious to stop him? Radha, angrily, my dear mother, what can I say to you? Krishna is so cruel that he often attacks me on the street, and if I want to cry out very loudly, this boy with a peacock feather on his head, he covers my face, so I cannot cry out. And if I want to run away from the scene because I am afraid of him, he immediately spreads his arms and he blocks my way. I piteously fall down on his feet, and then in an angry mood, he bites my face. Mother, try to understand my situation, and don't be unnecessarily angry with me. Instead, please tell me how I can save myself from these terrible attacks of Krishna. Poornamasi, to herself, she says, the tree of her love does not shake at its roots. And she turns lovingly to Radha and she says, O playful girl, how, simply by desiring him, will you make Krishna enter the pathway of your eyes? Radha thinks of Krishna and she says to herself, alas, alas, O Krishna, why do we crooked-hearted girls think that you are a volcano burning with great flames? Please allow me to see your splendid youthful form and cool the fire that now burns in my eyes. Poornamasi, looking very affectionately towards Radha, she says, my dear child, come for a moment into this solitary garden of flowers and write a letter. Your two friends will carry this letter to Krishna. Then, accompanied by Lalita and Vishakha, Radha exits. Poornamasi starts walking with Nandamukhi and says, Nandamukhi, Krishna is not very far away. I can hear the mooing of his cows and the filling the southern sky. So I will go now for my bath. And Poornamasi and Nandamukhi exit as well. So now the stage is empty and Krishna enters. Anxious, he says, from the moment that abode Sri Radha, who is splendid like new lightning, suddenly filled my eyes with wonder, my heart fell into a whirlpool of rapt attention. And now my heart, like a yogini, has renounced all other happiness. Krishna says, I sent my friend to bring a gunja necklace. Why does he delay? Then, carrying this necklace, gunja necklace in his hands, Madhu Mangal enters. And he looks and sees Krishna on the other side of the stage. And he says, why is my dear friend so unhappy? So be it. In time, I will know why. Then Madhu Mangal walks up a little closer to watch what Krishna is doing. And he sees Krishna and he says, looking at a vine blossoming with many golden champak flowers, beautiful golden flowers, Krishna trembles. I think fair Radha, decorated with new kumkum, is now pictured on the drawing paper of Krishna's heart. So then Madhu Mangal walks up to Krishna and he hands him the garland and says, my friend, please take this. And he offers the garland to Krishna. And Krishna, as if he has not even heard Madhu Mangal, he says, her body is splendid like a budding Ketaki tree on a golden mountain. When will she become a lightning flash, decorating the splendid monsoon cloud of my chest? Madhu Mangal is listening and he says to himself, my guesses and speculations have now borne their fruit. Then, openly with a loud voice, he says, "Dear friend, why did you not see me, even when I stand here before you and call to you?" And Krishna immediately conceals his emotions and he says, "Oh, friend, entranced by the beauty of this winding, beautiful, flowering champak vine, I did not notice you." Madhu Mangal, you speak the truth. Why were you looking at this winding champak vine? Krishna says, "Friend, I cannot find where this winding vine starts." Madhu Mangal, "Friend, for a moment, please stop this crookedness and speak plainly. Why is your heart now desolate like a desert?" Krishna smiles and says, "Friend, it is because I have no garland." Madhu Mangal, "You should say girl, not garland." Krishna, "This is a foolish suspicion." Madhu Mangal, "You do not know that your peacock feather has fallen from your head. You do not see your garland has fallen from your neck. O youthful elephant playing in the groves of Vrindavan forest, these events are caused by the great power of two bumblebee eyes that have seen Radha." Krishna aside, "How did this rascal understand everything? Why try to fool him?" Krishna, "What you say is true. As the full moon in the month of Jyeshta fills the Ganga with violent waves, so Radha has transformed my heart." Madhu Mangal, "Perhaps you two have seen each other before?" Krishna, "No, no. Friend, whenever the cooling and splendid moon of her face begins to walk on the pathway of my eyes, my mother appears and stubbornly brings me home for supper." Madhu Mangal, "Friend, there are many beautiful gopis. Why do you love only Radha with such fervor?" Krishna, "Uncommon sweetness resides only in Radha. My dear friend, what a wonderful thing it is that since I have seen the beautiful lotus eyes of Srimati Radharani, I have developed a tendency to spit on the moon and the lotus flower." Do you wish me to continue to do part two? Just now, Lalita arrives, and as you know, she was busy with writing a love letter. So she comes in. Offstage, she says, "Have you seen the prince of the gopas?" And Krishna says, "Friend, that's a girl's voice. Let's be very quiet." And Lalita and Vishakha enter. And Lalita says to Vishakha, "Look, by divine arrangement, Krishna stands before us. Let us go to him." And they approach Krishna. And then they say, "Glory, glory to the bliss of Gokul." Krishna, "Friend Lalita, I think you must have come to the Vrindavan forest to pick many flower petals." Lalita, "By saying pick instead of give, you hide the truth you certainly already know. Please take this lotus petal." And she hands Krishna the letter from Radha. Krishna aside to himself. He says, "Heart, be peaceful, be happy. I think this lotus flower petal grew from the seed of your desire." But then externally Krishna acts crookedly and he says to Madan Mangal, "Friend, read this letter. This letter is a cup full of nectar for our ears." So Madan Mangal takes the letter and he reads it. He says, "Oh, dearly beautiful, the artistic loveliness of your picture is now impressed within my mind. Since you are now living within my mind, wherever I wish to run, because I am agitated by impressions of you, I find that you, O my friend, are blocking the way. Krishna, friend, this verse is very difficult to understand. Please read it again." Madan Mangal reads the letter again. And Krishna becomes very blissful and says to himself, "Saintly girls are afraid to break the rules of morality. I think her love must be very great." Then, openly, Krishna says excitedly, "Look, look, accompanied by all my friends, followed by the cows, and averse to hearing about women, I wander in this forest, and these loose girls should not be allowed to pollute us. Quickly, I will go and complain to the Gopa elders." And with feigned indignation, Krishna starts to march up and down as if he's angry. "Friend Vishaka, Radha has never seen me with her two eyes, and I have never seen her with my two eyes. I think it must be some other boy that has captured her heart. Vishaka, in the circle of Raj, who is great and powerful like you?" Lalita, "Handsome one, you delight everyone in Gokul. Why should this one girl suffer because of you?" Krishna, "My companion Madan Mangal does not tolerate any deviation from the path of piety. And Sridham is busily searching for my faults, therefore he does not even have time to sleep. Cruel Kamsa harshly rules this country. O bewildered girl, in these circumstances, how is it possible for me to fearlessly make a pious and beautiful girl burn in flames of anguish?" Lalita indignantly says, "Our hearts are so polluted by miserable condition that we are certainly going to hell. Nevertheless, Krishna does not give up his beautiful, loving, smiling, which is full of cheating tricks. O Srimati Radharani, you are very intelligent, but how could you have developed such great loving affection for this deceitful fellow from the neighborhood of the cowherds?" And then in great anger, seeing Krishna's rejection of Radha, Lalita begins to cry. But Vishakha is very clever. She says to herself, "This garland," she's carrying a garland to give to Krishna. She says, "This garland that I'm carrying was worn by Radha. Now I will give it to Krishna, and by observing his response, I will know his actual feeling towards Radha." So she says to Krishna, "O Krishna, may this very beautiful red and black gunja garland gracefully hang upon your neck." And she very carefully places the garland around Krishna's neck. And as soon as the garland touches Krishna's body. He is at first very pleased, but he pretends to be angry, and in the ecstasy that he feels from touching Radha's garland, he becomes very confused. And so he says, pretending to be angry, he says, although these gunja berries are very red and hard and gracefully round, they are both crooked and unripe. I do not wish this garland. And in great bewilderment, he takes off the garland. He takes it from around his neck, and at the same time, he takes the other garland that Madhu Mangal brought him. The garland that he had come with earlier, the Rangada garland. He takes the two off at the same time in his bewilderment, and he hands both of them back to Vishakha and says, "You take this." So Vishakha says to herself, "Krishna's bewilderment is our good fortune." So she covers both the garlands very carefully with a piece of cloth. And when Lalita, who is very hot-tempered, she looks at Krishna and she says, "Destiny has shown us the mood of this snake who loves millions of gopis. We shall both go now, and we shall stop Radha, who has fallen in love with a very unsuitable boy." Vishakha says, "Friend, what you say is right." Lalita says, "Vishakha, you take this gunja necklace to our dear friend and comfort her, and I will go immediately and explain everything to Purnamasi." So Lalita goes one way, Vishakha goes the other. Madhu Mangal looks at Krishna and says, "This girl adores you. Why don't you also adore her? You are building a staircase that leads up a mountain of regret." Krishna says, "Friend, what you say is true. It was not right to mock that girl." And then with regret he says, "Alas, I have foolishly uprooted the soft creeper of her desire just when it was ready to bear fruit." And Krishna is very sorry, and Madhu Mangal says, "Now what action will you take shelter of?" Krishna says, "Friend, I do not see any shelter except to write an answer to that letter." Madhu Mangal says, "What will we use to write our letter?" Krishna says, "A letter scented with roses would bring her under my spell." Madhu Mangal says, "Then let us go nearby to Prakasakand Tirtha, which is decorated with a great forest of roses." And Krishna and Madhu Mangal exit to visit the rose forest. Meanwhile, Vishakha enters, explaining everything to Radha. Radha says, desiring the happiness of his association and embraces, "My dear friend, I disregarded even my superiors and relaxed my shyness and gravity before them. Furthermore, although you are my best friend, more dear to me than my own life, I have given you so much trouble. Indeed, I even put aside the vow of dedication to my husband, a vow kept by the most elevated women. Alas, although he is now neglecting me, I am so sinful that I am still living. Therefore, I must condemn my so-called patience." Vishakha respectfully says, "Friend, please be comforted. Be comforted." And then she takes the beautiful garland that was Krishna's garland, and she places it right near to Radha's nose. Radha with understanding says, "Ah, in the beginning it made me almost fall unconscious. But why does this wonderful garland now revive me from that unconsciousness?" Then she says to herself, "Krishna, who has all glorious virtues, neglects this body of mine, a body that is therefore better off dead. Why do I shamelessly keep this body alive? I will drown it in the waters of the Kaliya lake." Then openly she says, "Vishakha, please tell my superiors that desiring to worship the sun god, I went to Dwadasa Ditya Tirtha." Vishakha says, "My friend, let us go." And they begin to walk toward Praskananda Tirtha, of course, where Krishna and Madhumangal are now picking roses. Krishna suddenly begins to tremble and with wonder, and he says, "This is not the valley of Mount Sumeru. So why do I see a golden radiance in all directions?" And listening, he says, "Aha! The sound of many jeweled anklets makes me know that the goddess of beauty has now entered Vrindavan forest to enjoy her pastimes." And Madhumangal says, "Aha! Now the deer places her foot in the trap." Krishna: "Oh friend, you understand everything very well. Let us now hide behind this tree and hear what they say." So they stand behind the tree. And Radha and Vishakha enter, and Radha is weeping and weeping and resting her hand on Vishakha's shoulder. And Vishakha is also crying, and she says, "Friend, everyone says that you are grave and patient and full of all other virtues. Why are you so upset?" Radha: "Friend, this rogue has robbed me of all my virtues. His chest is like a dam that stops the river of my patience, and his face is a moon that withers the lotus flower of my pious deeds. His arms are like pillars in a yajna to drive away my perpetual shyness. Alas, friend, the crooked snake of his glance has devoured everything." Krishna, from behind the tree, he says, "Beloved, stunned by your sweetness, Krishna has also lost all his virtues." Radha, not seeing Krishna, she puts her hands up in the air and she says, "Oh Krishna, oh killer of Putana, I was engaged in my own playful activities in my home, and because of my childish innocence, I did not know right from wrong. Therefore, is it good for you to have forced us into being so much attached to you and then neglecting us? Now you are indifferent to us. Do you think that is right?" Then she says to her friend, "My dear friend, if Krishna is unkind to me, there will be no need for you to cry, for it is not due to any fault of yours. I then shall have to die, and afterwards, please do one thing for me: to observe my funeral ceremony. Place my body with its arms embracing a tamal tree, like creepers, so that I may remain forever in Vrindavan, undisturbed. That is my request. Krishna, from behind the tree, friend, see how great her love is. Alas, says Radhika, never again will I see Krishna, whose face is like the moon and who enchants the three worlds. Then, full of longing, she returns and says, Vishakha, be kind to me, be kind, please be kind, show me his picture. Vishakha says, friend, there is no paper here to draw a picture. Radha anxiously says, then I will make him appear in my meditation. And Radha becomes wrapped in meditation. And Krishna says to Madhav Mangal, friend, my ears have just drunk a sweet nectar that they have never drunk before. Let us go before them. And then Krishna and Madhav Mangal walk out in front of Vishakha and Radha. And Vishakha sees that Krishna and Madhav Mangal have come, and she becomes very joyful, and she says with great respect, friend, by destiny, your happy meditation has borne its fruit. Open your eyes at once. And Radha slightly opens her eyes and becomes filled with wonder. Vishakha says, the boy for whose sake you fell into the devastation of love, and for whose sake you made your delicate body burn in the flames of love, the boy who wears a new peacock feather crown, the playful boy who is the master of your life, now stands before you. And Radhika says, oh, how sweet this dream is. And Vishakha says, oh, unbeliever, without sleeping, you never dreamed like this before. And Radhika, her eyes dance on the form of Krishna. And she says to herself, oh, my heart, excellent, excellent. By good fortune, this moment has come. And Krishna says, rascal Vishakha, I looked everywhere for you. Now, by good fortune, I have found you. A girl who looked just like you bewildered me and robbed me of my rare Rangana garland of unripe gunja berries. And Madhu Mangal says, yes, now take the garland which is now on Radha's neck. Take this garland, I see it there. Krishna said, friend, you know all about this. But still, this is not very good advice. Even in a dream, I cannot remember the touch of such a beautiful girl. Then Krishna says, when Srimati Radharani smiles, waves of joy overtake her cheeks, and her arched eyebrows dance like the bow of Cupid. Her glance is so enchanting that it is like a dancing bumblebee, moving unsteadily due to intoxication. That bee has bitten the whorl of my heart. And just as Krishna is about to approach Radha, there's a voice off stage. It says, granddaughter Vishakha? Krishna says, why has Jyotila, ripe with her old age, come so unexpectedly? And Jyotila marches in upon this scene. She looks ahead and she says to herself, why is Krishna here? Then she says openly, Vishakha, Why did you forget the incense and the sandalwood paste and the fragrances? Krishna, aside, he says, just as the Chakora bird was about to drink the moonlight, a mass of clouds has covered the crescent moon. Openly, he says, O wife of my mother's maternal uncle, I offer my respects to you, Jyotila, charming boy. Do not look at the young girls with such crooked eyes. Madhumanga. O lady, harsh as Indra's thunderbolt, my dear friend's glance is always kind and gentle. It is you who are squinting. Therefore, you should grant a benediction to yourself that your eyes may no longer squint. Jyotila, O snake, chasing young girls, why have you come here? Krishna, O noble lady, who would not be attracted by the wonderful beauty of these red roses? Jyotila, noble Mukhara told me that Krishna was here. Then openly, Jyotila says, charming boy, leave at once. Krishna, O talkative old lady, why are you so agitated? I will go whenever I wish. Jyotila looks at Krishna with crooked eyes and says, look, here, filled with charm and all the sweetness in the world, is my beautiful young daughter-in-law. And there, O mischievous boy with dancing eyes, are you, just by her side. Why would I not be anxious? Jyotila then looks at Vishakha and says, Vishakha, why are you here? Vishakha says, O noble lady, I saw this mischievous deer and I became filled with wonder. Jyotila, foolish, whimsical girl, give up this infatuation with the deer. Vishakha casts a crooked glance at Radha. And Radha says to herself, O heart, be still, be still. I have not yet drunk the nectar of Krishna's words, and I have not yet glanced at his face from the corners of my eyes. Oh, my friend, my heart, after so long, I finally have this chance to enjoy pastimes with Krishna. But now, alas, wicked fate, using this old lady as its tool, stands in my way. Jyotila says to herself as an aside, how glorious is the sight of Krishna. It is not a calamity that my daughter-in-law is in Krishna's company. But then she turns around and she says, Vishakha, look, the afternoon is about to end. Let us hurry at once and go to the sun god's temple. And she bustles the two girls out and the three gopis leave. Krishna says to Madhumanga, friend, this girl is like moonlight that follows the full moon of Purnamasi. Let us go immediately and see Purnamasi. And then Krishna and Madhumangal exit. Thus ends Act 2 of Madhugda Madhava.
After hearing the verses that Rupa Goswami read, Ramananda Roy said, "This is not a poetic presentation. It is a continuous shower of nectar. Indeed, it is the essence of ultimate realizations that appears in the form of a play. The wonderful descriptions of Rupa Goswami are superb arrangements to express loving affairs. Hearing them will plunge the heart and the ears of everyone into a whirlpool of transcendental bliss. What is the use of a bowman's arrows or a poet's poetry if they penetrate the heart but do not cause the head to spin?" And then he turns to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and says, "Without your mercy, such poetic expressions would be impossible for an ordinary human being to write. My guess is that you have given him, Sri Rupa, the power." And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, "I met Rupa Goswami at Prayag. He attracted and satisfied me because of his qualities." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then praised the metaphors and other literary ornaments of Srila Rupa Goswami's poetry. "Without such poetic attributes," he said, "there is no possibility of preaching these transcendental mellows." Then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu requested all his personal associates to bless Rupa Goswami so that he might continuously describe the pastimes of Vrindavan, which are full of bhav, emotional love of God. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Srila Rupa Goswami's elder brother, whose name is Sanatan, is such a wise and learned scholar that no one is equal to him." And he told Ramananda Roy, "Sanatan Goswami's renunciation of matter is just like yours. Humility, renunciation, and excellent learning exist in him simultaneously. I empowered both these brothers to go to Vrindavan to expand the literature of bhakti." Ramananda Roy replied to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "My Lord, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you like, you can cause even a wooden doll to dance. I see that the truths regarding transcendental mellows that you have expounded through my mouth, Ramananda Samvad, are all explained in the writings of Rupa Goswami. And because of your causeless mercy to your devotees, you want to distribute the transcendental pastimes of Vrindavan. And anyone empowered to do this can bring the entire world under your influence." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then embraced Rupa Goswami and asked him to offer prayers at the lotus feet of all the devotees that were present. Adwaitacharya, Nityananda Prabhu, and all the other devotees showed their causeless mercy to Rupa Goswami by embracing him in return. Seeing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's special mercy towards Srila Rupa Goswami, and seeing Rupa Goswami's personal qualities, all the devotees were struck with wonder. Then, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left with all of his devotees, Haridas also embraced Sri Rupa. Haridas Thakur said, "There is no limit to your good fortune. No one can understand the glories of what you have described." Srila Rupa Goswami replied, "I do not know anything. The only transcendental words I can utter are those which Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu makes me speak." And then from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, "Although I am the lowest of men, and although I have no knowledge, The Lord has mercifully bestowed upon me the inspiration to write transcendental literature about devotional service. Therefore, I offer my obeisances at the lotus feet of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has given me the chance to write these books. In this way, Srila Rupa Goswami passed his time in close association with Haridas Thakur by discussing the pastimes of Krishna with great happiness. All the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu thus spent 4 months with him. Then the Lord bade them farewell, and they returned to Bengal. Srila Rupa Goswami, however, stayed at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and when the Doliyatra festival took place, he saw it in great happiness along with the Lord. And after the Doliyatra festival ended, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bade farewell to Rupa Goswami also. The Lord Shakti Sancharila empowered him and bestowed upon him all kinds of mercy. "Now go to Vrindavan and stay there," the Lord said. "You may send here your elder brother, Sanatan." When you go to Vrindavan, stay there. Preach transcendental literature and discover and excavate all the holy places. Establish service to Krishna and preach the mellows of Lord Krishna's devotional service, and I shall also go to Vrindavan once more. My dear devotees, note that the result of empowerment is service to Krishna. We remain always servants of the servants of the servants of the servants of Krishna. Having thus spoken, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced Rupa Goswami, and then he placed his lotus feet upon his head. Sri Rupa Goswami took leave of all the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and returned to Vrindavan by the path to Bengal. Thus I have described the second meeting of Rupa Goswami and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Anyone who hears of this incident will certainly attain the shelter of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Praying at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Sri Raghunath, always desiring their mercy, I, Krishnadas, narrate Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita following in their footsteps. Thus send the Bhaktivedanta purports to Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Antilila, first chapter, which describes the second meeting of Srila Rupa Goswami and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We'll close by asking everyone to meditate on this little picture that I hold up before you, the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, while I read Rupa Goswami's realizations about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And at the end, there is a benediction offered to those who meditate deeply upon the feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Your lotus feet are worshipped by the devoted Shiva and other demigods. You are splendidly manifested in the city of Lord Jagannath. For the surrendered devotees, you are a kalpa briksha tree, O son of Sachi. O Lord, O giver of liberation, please be merciful to me, a great fool. Neither the great avatars nor the great intellectuals headed by Sarvabhauma can properly describe you. Who is more intelligent than you? I bow down to offer my respects to you. O son of Sachi, O Lord, O giver of liberation, please be merciful to me, a great fool. the jewel of pure devotional service, which the Vedic Upanishads had not revealed and the great avatars had not described. You are now throwing into this world from the nectar ocean. O son of Sachi, O Lord, O giver of liberation, please be merciful to me, a great fool. O Lord, whose dancing and ecstatic love filled Lord Shiva with wonder, O Lord, who revealed to the surrendered devotees the nectar of pure devotion, O Lord, who cannot be understood by the proud, by the egoists, O son of Sachi, O Lord, O giver of liberation, please be merciful to me, a great fool. Out of your great and splendid mercy, you deliver even the lowborn and the sinful. This had made me very happy at heart. I take shelter of you, O son of Sachi. O Lord, O giver of liberation, please be merciful to me, a great fool. O Lord, who delights the bumblebees of the surrendered devotees with the honey words which trickle from your lotus mouth. O Lord, who is an ocean of the jewels of the holy names that brings auspiciousness to all people. O son of Sachi, O Lord, O giver of liberation, please be merciful to me, a great fool. O Lord, whose face is like the moon, O Lord, whose eyes are sleepless and who glisten, O Lord, whose smile is like a cluster of flowers, O Lord, whose lips are handsome, O Lord, whose chest is broad, O Lord, whose arms are like two glorious snakes, O Lord, who is as splendid as millions of Kamadevas, O son of Sachi, O Lord, O giver of liberation, please be merciful to me, a great fool. O Lord, who is as splendid as a golden Ketaki flower, I am the most wicked person in the entire world. Still, even if a person is filled with a great host of faults, you do not see the slightest fault in him. For this reason, O Lord, who is so kind to the fallen, I worship you with a humble heart. O son of Sachi, O Lord, O giver of liberation, please be merciful to me, a great fool. O festival of happiness for this world, O pleasure of the heart of Sachi, O splendid moon of glory, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, please grant auspicious love for you to those persons who, their hearts wrapped in meditation on your footprints, hears and reads these eight verses. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ki Jai. Srila Rupa Goswami Ki Jai. Sri Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sri Giriraj Maharaj Ki Jai. Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Jai Jai Sri Radhe. Jai Jai Sri Radhe. Jai Jai Sri Radhe.